Welcome to the Workflow Show. I'm Merrill, along with my co-host,
Nick Gold, coming live from the cloud.
Live from the cloud. What does that even mean? The cloud. The cloud is like that.
I'm chilling with Care Bears, shooting like rainbow flavor out of my belly, man.
Yeah.
I got a big Apple logo on my belly. I'm Apple Bear.
The cloud is kind of like the new Web 2.0, isn't it?
It's what? Maybe the cloud converged with Web 3.0. But
right.
Today our theme is talking about the Adobe Happy Cloud, or otherwise known as Adobe's Creative Cloud, and what the heck that is, and why, as a creative professional, you should care.
Right. So this is sort of the Wild West of software sales. I would have to say this is a new model that is emerging in the software marketplace for how you retain or utilize your software. In the past, it was shrink-wrapped. Newsflash, Adobe is doing away with their shrink wrap.
Dude, there used to be a store in the mall near where I grew up in Western Massachusetts.
Was it called Babbage's?
Babbage's, dude.
Was it really?
It was a Babbage's.
Oh, that's so funny.
And how cool was that, that you could walk into a store to buy like shrink wrapped ones and zeros back in the day?
I mean, like...
And it was named after one of the fundamental guys who invented, you know, modern computing, Babbage. And just... That just wouldn't happen today.
Aw, sad.
No, it is sad. It's very, you know, buying my Commodore 64 games and stuff, you know, all those MicroProse games.
Good old Babbage's. But that we are very far removed from them.
And then, aren't we, though? Us 21st century versions of our younger selves.
It's so strange that so compacted the time frame in which we are moving forward. But
I look better than I thought I would as a 12-year-old. As a 40 or 35-year-old.
Well, you might want to rethink the way that that came out of your mouth, but... anyway, so that's the way we used to get. We used to get in our car. We used to pay $1.72 for gas to get over to Babbage's and then get our shrink wrap copy of software. That's the way it was. But so now,
now
we're between two models, right?
Betwixt,
indeed.
And yeah, it's like, think about it. If software or even electronic media is a bunch of ones and zeros, and we have high bandwidth internet connections constantly, yeah, how much sense does it make to actually buy a physical copy of a bunch of ephemeral ones and zeros that we can just as easily download?
Well, you know, and I think the place where we've seen that in practice already is something like Netflix, right? Why buy the DVD if you can pay a monthly subscription fee to have access to it whenever you want in your home anyway, and you have an internet connection?
Well, and, you know, there's another aspect to this too, which is like buying a piece of software. We all know that software is kind of this living thing, right? It always evolves. It's always changing. We're very well aware of what version numbers are with software, and that no piece of software is typically ever going to just stay the same. It's always going to get updates and change, and sometimes there'll be minor updates and sometimes minor upgrades and sometimes whole new major upgrades. And the thing of it is, you know, buying a piece of software that's in this constant state of flux isn't like buying a toothbrush or a car, where you're buying that object and it's going to basically be that object until you're done with it. Does it really make sense to buy this thing in one state and have to purchase upgrades constantly or every year or two when they come out, when you know inherently that this is a thing that is evolving around us all the time and that the developers are constantly working on it behind the scenes? So this is what we're going to get at today. I think, Merrill, maybe we should start talking a little bit more just about this, the word cloud, because Adobe uses it, Creative Cloud, but everyone's using that word differently these days.
What is the cloud? Okay, so the cloud, as a basic definition, is remote servers on the internet.
That is what
the cloud is.
It basically means the internet.
Right? Because when you do a diagram, right? So if you're diagramming like a network infrastructure, when you represent the internet by drawing a cloud. So that's the origins of this terminology is the internet is the cloud, and that's what many IT folks
have referred to. I will say this, that cloud-based internet services, I think in some sectors, and at least originally when that phrase was starting to get bandied about, it had a slightly more specific meaning, which typically was taking a bunch of server and storage infrastructure and kind of building out a more generic consolidated infrastructure. And as different needs arise, instead of having to build kind of self-contained little IT infrastructures for each little purpose that arises, you basically have a consolidated infrastructure, and you can kind of virtually provision portions of it out to different types of needs, whether they're storage or computational, that arise. And you have folks like Amazon, who were kind of the early leaders and still the leaders in having a very consolidated yet publicly available, if you're willing to pay them for it, infrastructure. You know, Amazon has their S2 storage infrastructure. They've got their compute infrastructure. And if you kind of are launching a new internet company, or you are doing some types of processing or video transcoding, instead of buying your own servers and setting it up in your own location, the idea of the cloud was kind of like, well, let a few big parties build it, and then I can kind of connect to it over the internet and just use little portions of it. And as I need more storage or need more computational resources, I don't just have to buy more physical boxes. I can kind of just pay them more money every month and take advantage of just a bit more of their infrastructure and be able to scale up those needs, you know, seamlessly, essentially instantaneously. And I don't even have to build a single thing. It's really just I have a pipe to them across the internet. I think that's kind of what cloud originally
meant. It don't mean that no more, though.
Well, now everyone uses it. It is like Web 2.0, as you said. It's something that gets thrown out by everyone and doesn't really mean jack, kind of. It means...
Only thing it means is that it's something that is remote. It's infrastructure that you are connecting to that is not in-house.
But the funny thing is... You know, so you're right. Like, and you know, I think one of those things that is a cloud type of thing that a lot of people use is if they have a hosted email account, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Rackspace.com or a hosted Exchange server, you know, maybe the new Microsoft 365 service where your Exchange email servers and calendar servers are basically their boxes and you're just hosting them. We just switched over to a new Exchange-like email service at Chesapeake Systems that we don't physically have the box to. It's being hosted by someone else. I think it's fair to say, in a sense, that's a cloud-like service. But now, you know, Adobe calls their thing Creative Cloud, which I think is interesting because, honestly, it's really not even very much like a cloud service because you still do download the software to your computer.
I would say it's a hybrid, right? So here's the thing about Adobe Cloud. It's sort of the unknown, right? What does that even mean? Well, it doesn't mean what you think it would mean, because maybe at first bluff you would say Adobe Cloud, so does that mean that I pay to access Adobe applications through a web applet?
Yeah, and like window? Maybe these apps are actually running on their servers. That's not what they
do
mean.
Do I have to be internet connected always?
That's, you know, not what they mean.
No, it isn't.
And they mean something decidedly more markety, I think.
Markety and collaboratively.
Yeah, and like, so, you know, one of the things I'm just going to point out, Merrill, is that another phrase that people may have heard of is SaaS, or software as a service, or more of like a subscription-based model to using software.
And that's like Google.
Sort of. Or, yeah, Google web apps, like the Google services that you can actually pay for.
Those are the SaaS.
Although those are truly hosted in the cloud, so they are more cloud-esque. See, what Adobe is talking about, you said it's like kind of more hybrid-y. It's like you get the apps, you download them, you're running them on your computer, but instead of buying version 6 of Creative Suite or version 5.5 of Photoshop or whatever, you're simply subscribing to all of the Adobe software, basically, for a set period of time.
Well, you're subscribing to get access to those things. So now is probably a good time to talk about how exactly this works, right? Because I'm sure by now the question of, while this significantly cheaper model has emerged, how does it actually work? And here's how it works, right? If you buy Adobe Creative Cloud for Teams, which is the corporate enterprise-level Adobe product for access, what you are getting is access to a portal to download every single Adobe product that has been released in the present form. So this basically affords you master collection. So even if you are, you know, a design premium folk or a production premium person, but you still need access to InDesign or whatever, you have full access to as many apps as you want or as little apps as you want. So
for a 12-month period at a time.
For a 12-month subscription. So think of this like your Netflix, like your Amazon Prime, where you have a yearly subscription model in which you have access. And the files that you're downloading are just like if you were to get a shrink wrap copy. It's a DMG file that you will expand and mount onto your desktop and run an installation. And you are not required to be continuously connected to the internet or to the cloud in order to utilize the
software. How often do you have to be? Because it's got a call back to home for security, right?
That's, well, for authentication's sake, Adobe tells me that it's once every 30 days. So I can imagine that most folks, especially those that do web work or production work, are hitting the internet at least once every 30 days. So it's not too much of a point. Of course, this is very specific for the commercial market. This is not appropriate for the government or EDU customers just quite yet. But so you get access to a seat of Adobe Cloud, and what does that afford you? Every single piece of software, which you have access instantaneously, you pay a monthly subscription fee to utilize it. And then you re-up like anything else.
So what if a major new upgrade comes out? For the last number of years, it seems like Adobe has largely slipped into a cycle where pretty much annually something comes out. Sometimes they call it a 6.5. Sometimes they call it, or you know, not a 6.5, but a 0.5, but it's still a paid update. Sometimes it's a major new version. We've heard some rumblings that there may actually be a little bit of a rebrand coming.
Yeah.
But,
you know,
but what happens when those things come out?
Well, we can't, you know, I'm not sure about that rebrand just yet, but what we do know is that this model is designed specifically to relieve the kind of consternation you would get as a customer for not having the latest and greatest. So if you were to have Adobe Creative Cloud for Teams and a major update to the entire line of Adobe products were to come out, you would be afforded that as part of your subscription.
Do you have to get the upgrades? Maybe your workflow is like, well, I know these plugins only work with this version of After Effects. Can you stay with your version of After Effects you're on?
I believe you can.
You can. Because again, you're having to go to Adobe's site and download the new versions instead of having them on an installer DVD. You're still going to their site and downloading the new versions manually. You're choosing to do that. And so you can stay on whatever version you want. It's just a matter of you can, whenever it becomes available, download the latest version when it's released, whether it's a minor point update or a major new version. As long as you're under that Cloud for Teams subscription package, you will have the right to be using that newer version and download it and deploy it in your organization, you know, when you deem appropriate to do so. And that'll basically be a permanent thing. And as long as you're paying this monthly amount in these 12-month packages or contracts, any basic new piece of Adobe software that comes out, major or minor, for basically anything that ever would have been part of their master collection, you will be able to get access to and use as soon as you want to when it comes out. And presumably, I guess if they release new software, like they kind of bought that company SpeedGrade.
You know,
when they
I was just
CSX,
thinking about SpeedGrade, right?
You'll get these new things, right?
I think that's a product that is really in its infancy as far as under Adobe's wing. I expect the next go-round to see a more robust offering from SpeedGrade now that Adobe has had some time with it in the family. So whatever next iteration of SpeedGrade, I you know, that would be something really cool to see under the
Well,
under
and
the
I can't speak to any specifics, but I you know, have talked with some pretty senior Adobe folks, and I do know, you know, like it seemed like they really listened to a lot of feedback from Final Cut users on Premiere Pro when CS6 came out, and Premiere Pro really had a lot of advantages over the 5.5 version, and it really seemed like there was a lot of feedback that they incorporated from Final Cut users to make it more appealing to them now that Final Cut as we knew it is no more. Well, from what I'm hearing and understanding, the new version of Premiere Pro is going to be just more of that, even more appealing to Final Cut users, or maybe even Avid users, or whomever, as their primary editing
Media
package.
Media 100 users.
SpeedRaiser users. Sony U-matic linear tape editor users who just won't let it go. But, you know, if that comes out and it's very appealing, if you have one of these Cloud for Teams memberships, you and your organization, you'll be able to get it. So that's exciting. And, you know, again,
you know what else you get?
What's that?
So one of the things that is oft-touted but not necessarily looked at very closely about Adobe Cloud for Teams is the collaborative nature of it, right? So there is online storage, 100 gigs for a per seat of team Now, depending on the workflow and the kind of work that you do, you potentially can, quote unquote, store some files in the cloud.
That might at least be, for a video user, a way to put like a low bitrate H.264 rough cut up for other people on their team to do like a review of, right?
Yeah, or you know, if you have some still image files that...
Photoshop, you know, files, After Effects files, you know, you could probably keep at least a handful, and then you can get more space from their storage in the cloud if you want to, right?
And
you
sure. just have to pay and that's, more. And, you know, I feel like that's probably where a lot of the core of their cloud talk comes from, at least yeah. originally. But, you know, so to dispel, like, the confusion, though, the key points are that you don't have to be always connected to the internet. It's not a web app. It is the exact same app that you would pay for and download through licensing or get a shrink wrap. Of course, the only difference is the fact that you're paying for it perpetually. And what does that mean?
Well, not perpetually, right? Because these phrases kind
of... Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. The only difference is that you're paying for it
recurring,
annually,
yeah,
in a recurring manner.
And we should say that, because to me, perpetual sounds like you...
It's confusing.
Perpetual sounds like it's describing a subscription, but in the world of software licensing...
Perpetual licenses mean you have them forever.
Yeah, perpetual means you bought it. You kind of own that license to that version, and you'll have to pay for an upgrade or something when the paid upgrade comes out.
Sure. So what does that mean from the way that you allocate funds internally, right? So if in the past, if you wanted to buy a perpetual license, something like Adobe transactional licensing download.
Or shrink wrap copy.
Or shrink wrap, right? You purchase it outright. You go to your department head and you say, here are the budget numbers. Here are how many seats I need. And this is the capital expenditure per the year that it'll cost us to buy these items.
And that would be kind of unpredictable for an organization, because you maybe had a rough sense of Adobe's upgrade cycle, but they have changed it over the years. In fact, they've accelerated it. And I think that can be tough for an organization to plan around, because you don't know exactly when an upgrade is going to come out. You don't know how compelling an upgrade will be for you and your organization. So you don't know, should we have worked an upgrade this year into our capital expenditure budget for our Adobe or Key Creative software, or... You know, do we have an every other year cycle and just hope there's something compelling out so it matches our budget?
Sure. And by and large, that's kind of been a hit or miss process.
It really has. I mean, I've been here for 9 years, and, you know, I think it frustrates a lot of our creative, you know, customers that, you know, they never really know when there's going to be a compelling upgrade that they should work into their budget. But the nice thing about this kind of subscription-based model is that you can kind of now treat it as an OPEX or operational expenditure, and you know full well per team member exactly how much the software is going to cost per year, because it's just keeping in that subscription model. And you don't ever have to plan for bigger payments when a major upgrade comes out. You know that as long as we're paying, you know, XYZ per user per year for them to have access to every Adobe application, they'll always have access to anything. So I think from a budgeting perspective, it's highly valuable to people.
Well, you know, just a further distinction between CapEx and OpEx, right? So OpEx, these are the expenses that you know that you will incur.
Your cable bill,
your
electric,
heat,
your power. Yeah, exactly.
So you can plan for these. These are a constant. You know they're always going to hit X amount always. So what does that mean? It means potentially customers that have already committed to their FY 2013 and even FY 2014 budgets, and they already have a set limit of capital expenditure, they can actually still evaluate looking at something like Adobe Creative Cloud for Teams, because it is, in a subscription model, truly treated in a different manner. And since it's a sort of a maintenance model, it's a monthly sort of thing, you do it that way, then bam, we have a place within our budget to account for. And by the way, it's about 50% cheaper than buying the perpetual license.
Yeah, if you buy either the shrink wrap versions or the more traditional kind of licenses, which you were still downloading, but you were still buying a particular version number of, if you were always staying on top of the major paid upgrades as they came out, that definitely would cost you more per user than these new annual subscription models. If you say over a 3-year period, these subscriptions to always have access to the latest and greatest. It's a definitely cheaper, hundreds and hundreds of dollars per user cheaper to be under the subscription than to always be buying the major versions and then upgrade versions when they came out, you know, over the same 3-year period, say. So it does make sense for you if you always want access to the latest and greatest. I just want to say one more thing that, you know, you were saying about, you know, moving over to this operational expense mode for using our technology. You know, the interesting thing about the creative professional community is, you know, the creative editing workstations that we use and the key pieces of software that really we use on them to do our jobs, they were always seen as these big capital expenditures, these big money sinks. You know, you wouldn't necessarily know when you would need to upgrade, or when would Apple have a compelling new computer to come out that you always would want, or that you would, you know, how long do I want to hang on to my Mac Pro or my laptop, or, you know, are we going to upgrade to the new Adobe version? You know, is it compelling enough? Between offerings like this Creative Cloud software subscription model and another thing that we often talk to clients about, which is financing at least their workstations and those kind of client end pieces of hardware. You know, if you finance your computers and you're under a subscription model for your key pieces of creative software, you can move your creative users, maybe not your core infrastructure, but at least the creative users technology infrastructure, to a model where you can basically break down every user's technology cost to a very easily predictable monthly cost, like your electricity bill, your water bill, and other utilities. And so it's interesting.
And what are we talking? We're talking $50 a month.
Well, yeah, for the Adobe software. And then, you know, if you finance your users' creative computers, you know, it might be whatever the cost of the computer is split into a 36-month period, and you're on one of these fair market value leases. And when the lease period ends, you basically trade up to a new workstation, and whatever the best one is available at basically the same price as what your last one was, boom, you just get under a new model and you send to the financing company your old computer and you get the new one from us, and, you know, you're under a new lease. So, you know, it's this very interesting transition that's taking place now where these big pieces of tech, at least for the creative users themselves, that used to command these big kind of unpredictable once in a while capital expenditures, you can kind of turn into a utility now, and you can save your CapEx budgets, the things that are a little less routine, in, you know, for your core infrastructure, whether it's a storage area network or that media asset management database or archive system that you wanted. You can kind of think of those things as those bigger, less often CapEx expenditures, but your workstation and the software that's running on it through things like the Adobe Creative Cloud and even financing the computers, you know, can be just this monthly payment per user. I know that if I was starting a creative firm now, I would definitely be budgeting for my creatives in this way. Again, I'd probably have more long-term 5-year plans for the core infrastructure, but I would definitely want to reduce the technology cost for my individual creative users into a very easily predictable monthly cost. It just seems to me, if I were a business owner with a creative firm, that would be a very slick, you know, way of planning around those needs.
So, you know, the other interesting thing about cloud is, you know, they're not doing away with perpetual licenses
yet.
You know, this is certainly probably not for the next cycle or two, but they, where there is a little bit of confusion is the fact that they are in fact doing away with shrink wrap. So basically moving forward, you have two ways of getting things that you need. You can either utilize an app store kind of mechanism, right? You know, so you either buy it through an app store, you buy it through a vendor like us, and then they send you a link that says download the DMG installer for, you know, Adobe CS6, or you do this model, but there's no bandwidth issues associated with utilizing the software. And
not for utilizing. Obviously, these are big apps and big installers, many gigabytes in size, and so there will be time to download them.
Sure, sure. And the same end-user license agreements that applied to the perpetual licenses remain here the same. They haven't really changed any of that. So what you'll see is the ability to install these and use them as though you were using a perpetual license. So, you know, this, it'll be status quo as far as all that is concerned.
But yes, you know, as you were saying, the Creative Cloud for Teams, which is the offering that's really made for creative organizations instead of individuals, That is something you can buy through us, through Chesapeake Systems, and a very, for the time being, select number of kind of more the higher level Adobe video resellers. And we made the cut. We're kind of proud of that. We're very close with the Adobe folks. We're big proponents of their technology. Frankly, I think for any creative professional who's been doing this for a while, whether you're a Final Cut 7 user and you just want to get a taste for things, you maybe were thinking about Final Cut 10, maybe you have Avid or are thinking about Avid, I still think for the monthly fee that Adobe is charging to give you access to every single app they have.
Mind you, that's everything. We're talking everything from Dreamweaver to
Photoshop,
After Effects,
Illustrator. I think you'd be crazy not
InDesign,
to, I think you'd be crazy
Audition.
Not to have one of these subscriptions. I think any creative user right now should have an Adobe Creative Cloud for Teams subscription. So yeah, that's something you can come to us. We can quote for you. We can very, very quickly, as in like pretty much a matter of moments, basically issue you the subscription so you can then just go to Adobe's website and download the apps. And then we send you an invoice like we normally would. I mean, we can even send you a quote originally. You're not buying it in an entirely different way. You still would come to us and we'll give you a quote. You sign off on it and then we'll send you an invoice. But from really the moment you sign the quote, we can basically issue you your subscription right then and there, and you can just go to Adobe's website, download, and start using the new stuff as soon as it's available.
So just imagine what kind of flexibility that affords. I don't know. Let's just, hypothetical scenario, you are on site and you're producing something, and you have a team full of folks who are generating video content, and it comes to light that the on-site editor that you hired, he's just not coming. So you don't have, you know, you have a Mac, but you don't have any way of getting the Adobe product that you need to start maybe doing some string outs or you know, logging video or whatever the case may be. You call up Nick or myself and you're like, I am on set and I don't know what to do. I don't have a copy of the software, but I have an internet connection. What do I do?
We can just basically give you the keys to the kingdom, and either you would download it, or maybe because other users are using this the Creative Cloud offering already, you have kind of saved the DMG installers that you kind of bring with you and you have on you. You can just install it and we'll issue you the key right there, and you'll be able to use it in a completely unfettered mode, basically instantaneously. There's another point I want to make about this, and it's kind of like what maybe some of Adobe's other, you know, interests were in moving to this model. And I think it's one that's actually very exciting for users that they might not initially think of. Some people may be aware of this legislation that dictates a lot of how businesses practice called Sarbanes-Oxley. And Sarbanes-Oxley or Sarbox or however you want to refer to it has some...
Sarbox all belong to us.
So it has some very interesting, you know, stipulations about how companies account for their earnings. And you may remember that a few years ago, Apple would always charge like a few bucks for these iOS upgrades for certain users of the iPhone. And this kind of, everyone was like, why are they charging me for this? Why are they charging me for this? And Apple always said, well, it's because of Sarbanes-Oxley and because of the way that we account for our earnings and profit and revenue, we have to be internally consistent, and we can't issue an update of a certain level of significance without charging you for it as a new separate thing, because it violates the terms of the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation, and we hadn't
what
previously
does that even
accounted.
Mean? I've
there's,
never even
there's
heard
no,
of it.
There's no point in getting into it. It's literally binders and binders full of legislation about how companies need to adhere to their accounting practices. But what's interesting about this, Apple changed the way that they handled their accounting a few years ago. And so since then, they didn't charge for iOS updates because they've kind of pre-accounted for future quote-unquote earnings that take place when people kind of download these new updated versions. And it frankly encouraged Apple to be more aggressive in their update cycles for especially iOS, because again, they didn't have to charge for a whole new version. They had kind of already accounted for future software releases that people would download. Adobe is definitely doing the same thing here. They have to kind of, traditionally, they had to adhere to certain internal policies. Like, you know, maybe they had a minor feature update that they wanted to roll out, and they felt like they should be able to just push it out to all of their users as a minor point update. But the way that they handled their accounting probably prevented them from pushing that out until a major paid upgrade. What's very interesting about the new way of them selling in the subscription-based model is largely because of these accounting regulations, they can push updates on basically any schedule they want to. And so let's say they have cool little new things that they've developed in Premiere Pro, and they want to push those out. They will no longer have to wait to some kind of arbitrary date upon which they release this major new version.
NAB.
Yeah, it's been NAB time frame for the last few years now. They'll be able to push these things whenever. And you know, a little cool new feature of Premiere Pro comes out, they can push it out. A new cool new feature of Photoshop comes out, they can push it out whenever it's available and they feel it's fully baked.
It's hard not to draw a parallel between this and like, say, Netflix, right? So when Netflix started developing their own content and the House of Cards made its way up on there,
you just got access to it.
You just got access to it. And you logged in one day and bam, here's a new show starring Kevin Spacey and it's part of your subscription.
So I think this is very exciting and represents a real genuine paradigm change to really the way software is even thought of in general, but especially how it's purchased with creative professionals, because you start to move away from the significance of these major and minor upgrade cycles, and really the software developers can just push out all the cool stuff whenever they want, and you have it available to you as soon as you feel like you want to download that new version. And I do want to say one other thing. A lot of customers that I've talked to, because they're so used to the cycle of purchasing a big version and purchasing a seat and paying for upgrades and kind of feeling like they own something tangible when they buy a piece of software, even though I think that's, you know, we're kind of deluding ourselves. You don't own anything tangible at all when you purchase a license to use a piece of software, which is all software purchases have ever been, are licenses to use someone's code on your computer. You know, a lot of people have expressed some consternation to me about this new model. I can't express vehemently enough how bright an idea I think it is, and that I think Adobe, to be like the first, one of the first major creative software developers to really full-fledged just jump on this model of software kind of subscriptions.
I mean, it's a bit of cojones. I mean, it really,
it's great.
I
give them tremendous credit. I think it's a fantastic model for our clientele at Chesapeake. I hope our clientele at Chesapeake choose to buy Creative Cloud from Teams through us. Certainly, it's definitely a new way of us distributing software and selling it to our clients. I appreciate the folks at Adobe who took us into that very kind of limited initial round of resellers who have access to sell Creative Cloud for Teams. So props to our buddies at Adobe. But you know, I think this is a brilliant, brilliant model. And I hope that our clients kind of think about this conversation we've had, let it bounce around in their heads, maybe have some fundamental ways of reevaluating the way they budget for and account for the costs associated with the technology side of their creative users.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're going to see here, if you are in any sort of decision-making role in an organization where you're dealing with creative software, now is the time to seriously reevaluate. You might come out the hero when you realize that you can provide the most up-to-date software to an entire group of folks that you're working with by simply reevaluating how you categorize your expenditure. And that's really probably the most exciting thing for me, is the fact that I know, just off the top of my head, I can think of 10 people that said, I really want the latest and greatest, but it's not in the cards right now. And it's because of the way in which they're handling their budgets, not because the software offering isn't robust. So at the end of the day, what Creative Cloud for Teams has afforded us is the ability to really sort of defer the cost over the period of a year.
Yep.
And, you know, treat it as though it's something that you can get access to at any time.
Just like your internet connection bill every month. This is our bill to always have the latest and greatest.
Now, we'll sell it to you in one full block, though.
Yeah. We'll sell it to you, but you can kind of budget for it as if it was just a monthly cost for your users. So if you have any questions, you want to move forward with it, you're maybe a Final Cut user who still is white-knuckling your Final Cut 7 install, and you haven't quite been sold on maybe moving the Adobe Premiere Pro path, you know, first of all, keep your eyes on Adobe's news over the next couple of months, because there is new stuff coming, and it's very exciting.
Yes.
And if you have follow-up questions, you can always reach out to Merrill, myself at Chesapeake. Our email address is workflowshow@chesa.com.
That's workflowshow@chesa.com.
You can also, you know, email basically the same cast of characters at prosales@chesa.com.
That's prosales@chesa.com.
You can always call us, visit our website. That's www.chesa.com. And
that's www.chesa.com.
Just in case you were missing it all those times.
In case.
So please reach out to us. Merrill, I appreciate Merrill has been inundated with working with our Adobe reps to kind of figure this new thing out, because it is a shift for us as well as a quote unquote software reseller and specialist. So Merrill, thank you for learning and researching all of these mechanisms over the past few weeks. But we know this system inside out now. We're ready to start selling it to people. And if you want to reach out to us, you know, Merrill or myself,
join
anytime.
Join us in the cloud.
Join us in the cloud, man. We're partying it up with the Care Bears, shooting rainbows out of our bellies with Adobe.
That's right.
All right. Until next time.
Until next time, this has been The Workflow Show.